This is Sports Open Line on KMOX.
All right, great to be with you on a Friday night here on Sports Open Line. Kevin Wheeler with you on KMOX. We'll be taking a look at some Week 6 NFL storylines with Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News coming up in about 8-9 minutes or so. I've got a potential trade target that could make some sense for the Cardinals. Again, this is just fun stuff right now, guys. This is not go get this guy or anything like that. But it's I'm looking at things that make sense. Where is a team that maybe is trying to make room for a prospect, maybe trying to save a couple bucks? Where's a team that maybe needs some pitching and you could help out with that? It's the kind of stuff that I've been looking at. I found one candidate that we'll talk about today, and that'll be coming up a little bit later on. Right now, I just wanted to continue with what I couldn't finish before the top of the hour, the Cardinals that are due for bounce back. So I've already made the case for Paul DeJong, and obviously it's based on his previous three seasons as a major leaguer. I want to make that same case for Colton Wong. As a guy that should be significantly better next year than he was in 2020. You know, he went out, and look, again, his career batting average is .261. He hit .265 this year. Okay, so not far off there. His on-base percentage this year was fine at .350, but his slugging percentage was down about 100 points from where it was in 2019. And, you know, again, just normal, you know, if you look at, just recent history, right? You look at his last three full seasons as an example. Look at Colton Wong, 2017, 2018, 2019. Like Paul DeJong, was an above-average major league hitter, right? DeJong, I said, was, I think, about 7% above league average over the 3 years before 2020. Colton Wong, about 5% above average. So if those guys go from where they were this year, and they were both somewhere in that 10 to 12, 13% below average range this past season, if they just go back to where they were in that 3 year stretch, and again, given their age, you know, Wong's entering age 30 season, DeJong entering age 27 season, they're not in that decline phase. There's no reason to say that they won't come back to basically sea level, right? So you look at Colton Wong, you know, his OPS on average over the 3 year period, 2017 to 2019, was .766. This year it was .675. He's better than that. Now, is he like he was in 2019, where he's almost an 800 OPS and he's 8% above league average? I don't know. But I know he's better than what he was this year. And given that he's a veteran with a track record, and again, not only just a track record that goes back a number of years, but a track record in recent years that shows that he's better than that, I think it's easy to say, again, you know, not as a way to argue that you don't need to go add anybody. I mean, you do. You need to add to this group. But there is room for improvement within the group. In fact, not only do you need to have something from outside, you need the guys inside the group to get back to where they were. And, you know, when you look at Colton Wong this year, you know, again, especially if you look at the StatCast numbers, there was nothing there that said his numbers should have been better. Nothing really changed. He actually hit the ball harder on average in 2020 than he did in 2019. So, you know, make of that what you will, but his expected numbers were basically the same as his actual numbers. So there was really nothing there that says, oh, yeah, this is... But the problem with that sample size is, it's that it's small. I mean, it's 2 months of time, and when we've seen him over the full six-month season, we've seen that he's been better than that. So, you know, I think, again, given the number of years that he had beforehand being good, it's reasonable to say that he should be something close to his career norm. And if he and DeJong are both that's going to help you a good bit, right? I mean, these are everyday players. These are guys you need. You know, Wong right now is a guy you're talking about as one of your key on-base guys at the top of the order. All he needs to do is get back to hitting more doubles. You know, that's the big thing that dropped off this past season. Yeah, his home runs dropped off. I'm not as worried about home runs from Colton Wong, but he does need to be a guy that hits 25 doubles, and that's kind of where he's been. And he was on a pace this year where he would have hit maybe 12 or 13. So you could see there was something going on there. And with all of these guys, part of the thing we have to adjust for is the number of games stacked on top of each other, how many of these guys were just playing fatigued the whole time, and how many of them just were never in a good place because you had, you know, 17-day layoff and it just jacked everything up. The other player I wanted to mention, and I'll be quicker on Tommy Edman because we have less to go on with Tommy Edman. I mean, we really only have, you know, part of 2019 and then 2 months here in 2020. But I think he's a much better offensive player than what we saw this year. I don't know that he's as good as he was in 2019, where he had an 850 OPS and he was 22% above league average. But I think he's better than what he was this year, where he hit 250. You know, the OPS was 685. You know, he was 13% below league average. So I'd say that, he's another one going into his age 26 season where it's fair to expect something significantly better. Now, again, do I expect 850 on the OPS? I don't. I always thought that that was a little bit more than what he was capable of. But I think, you know, he's seriously better than he was in 2020. So I think those three players are easy to say, all right, they're going to be better. Now, there are others that it's not as easy to say that. We'll talk about those other guys at another time, and we'll have some more baseball talk. I'm not starting any trade rumors, but I'm at least going to start talking about over days and weeks and months, we're going to start talking a little bit more about trade candidates too, guys that are potential trade targets that could be guys that fit in. I'll have one of those coming up later on this hour. Coming up next, we're going to get through some of the top NFL storylines in week six of the season with Vinny Iyer from the Sporting News when we come back here on Sports Open Line on KMOX.
This is Sports Open Line on KMOX.
All right, time to take a look ahead to this weekend's Week 6 of National Football League action, and happy to have Vinny Iyer from the Sporting News on the line to do that with me. You can find Vinny on Twitter at his name, which is nice and easy, at Vinny Iyer. Vinny, good to talk to you, man. How's everything going?
Doing well, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, glad to do it. And as of right now, you know, I guess we should cross fingers, knock on wood or whatever, but as of right now, it looks like we've got a full week of games set up for this weekend, so hopefully that doesn't change here in the next, 24 to 36 hours.
Yeah, it almost is like a weekly ritual now that we're getting used to. Is we look at the injury report, we look at the COVID-19 report, we see are there going to be any games rescheduled this week. And so far, so good. We did have a big reschedule, of course, moving Thursday Night Football, the big one,
right,
Bills Chiefs to Monday night. So I like the Monday night doubleheaders. That might be a thing at some point going forward. I'm not sure I love Tuesday night football, but maybe two games on Monday might be better, and maybe something NFL is going to explore at some point.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, I, you know, like this one Monday, it's going to be a 4 o'clock start time, Central time, 5 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, it'd be I like the idea of that too. I'm with you. I don't need another night. I don't need Tuesday night. I don't mind Thursday, Sunday, Monday. I don't mind that at all. It's fine. Spread it out a little bit, but I definitely don't want to add another one, mostly because, I mean, at some point, it's just going to cause problems with the schedule unless you're going to be, you know, finding a way to have an extra bye week somewhere in the mix.
Yeah, right now, the advantage is that you have games you can rearrange. It's still rather early. You haven't gotten to week 8, week 9, the midpoint of the season. So you can move games around and move back, and some teams don't have their bye. But when you get to week 10 through 12 here trying to make these moves, it's a lot harder. So I think the NFL just needs to make sure it tightens the clamps here as we go forward to the colder months and things get trickier here, deeper in the season. You've had more teams interact with more teams. So it's going to be a challenge, certainly. And at some point, they might have to explore the bubble. Maybe it's sort of the playoffs. But right now, not going to be an issue unless another team has a big outbreak like the Titans.
Yeah, you know, one thing, Vin, that I was critical of the league on at the beginning, and it's not like I'm hating on them. I understand what they're doing. They're trying to make as much of the projected revenue as they can. You know, and we all know that there are no – well, I shouldn't say no. In some places, there are no fans. In others, there are, you know, partial capacity. But I'm surprised they didn't build in more wiggle room to in case you have to have a team that's shut down for 2 weeks or you run into multiple reschedules for a team. And I know that – by canceling the Pro Bowl, they've given themselves a chance where they can have a Week 18, which is good. And I guess you could eliminate the bye week before the Super Bowl, and you could make a Week 19 if you need to. So maybe that's the flexibility instead of pre-scheduling it in that they're going to go that route.
Yeah, they're definitely holding on to those games and weeks for sure, just in case in the back end. And we know just with how things get in the colder months that there can be a spike or there's more players susceptible to getting this. So that's something they have to keep in mind. They want to hold on to that as long as possible. They don't want to go there just yet.
Right.
There are ways to move around the schedule, but if you move it around three or four times, it's hard to do it a fifth and sixth time. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops, and hopefully teams will learn from these early situations that say, hey, we're going to make some sacrifices and really be tight here if we're going to get a season done and everyone's going to be happy and get paid.
Yeah, no question. All right, Vin, before we look ahead to the games this weekend, I think one of the more interesting stories, and I don't know what it's going to mean, but one of the more interesting stories here this week has been the Le'Veon Bell saga. And, you know, predictably, it didn't go well with the Jets. Obviously, Kansas City looking for a little bit of running back help. You know, the rookie Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been really good, but was a lot better in the first game than he's been since then. And, you know, they have a couple other guys there, but, you know, they also lost the guy that was projected to start when he opted out before the season. So what do you make of, I know he's not playing this weekend, but what do you make of Le'Veon Bell with Kansas City and whether or not the problem in New York was him or just not having enough support, not having a good enough system around him?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't get the consistent usage either. You look at last year, he's a prolific pass catcher. Basically, every time you threw to him out of the flat, coming out of the backfield, short passes, checkdowns, he was going to catch the ball and be effective for you, but just didn't get that opportunity enough. And the Chiefs, I think, are in a bit of a conundrum with Edwards-Helaire because they like his receiving ability. I think that's exactly why they drafted him, but they don't always trust him in those passing situations and third down to pass protect. And I think that goes for a lot of the rookie running backs. It's always a challenge handling that part of it because all of a sudden you're facing guys going after the quarterback that are faster, bigger than you've seen consistently in college. So Le'Veon Bell is a technically sound, a blitz pickup guy. If you look at him, maybe the best in the NFL at doing this. I mean, that's how good he has been in the past with the Steelers at that level. So when you look at that, what do you think? Keeping Patrick Mahomes upright. Another way to keep Mahomes from getting pressure on him and taking hits. A lot of these teams are going to try to come after Mahomes in these situations. So, and Bell's another guy who can also slip out and make some key catches here. So it's a bit tough. I mean, in other seasons, maybe with Edwards-Helaire as a rookie, having a normal offseason might be a quicker transition here, but some of the aspects are harder to get down. So Bell's a veteran. You can plug him into this offense with Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. Things are going to be just fine there. And he's going to be motivated, right? They play the Jets in a couple of weeks. He went from the worst team in the AFC to the best team in the AFC with a chance to win the Super Bowl. I mean, keep in mind, he's always thinking about the Steelers as well. And this is a way to, hey, the Steelers are undefeated here, but I'm going to help the Chiefs here trying to get back to the Super Bowl. So all this is in mind. So he'll be motivated there. He took the one-year deal. He made enough money from the Jets where this is just kind of gravy for him right now. And he let the revenge train start here.
Yeah, I don't think it remakes the Chiefs, but again, when you're the Chiefs, the worst-case scenario here is you just added more depth. I mean, you added another player on that offensive side that gives you some balance so that you don't have to run Edwards-Helaire into the ground. Even if you want to prefer him as you know the rookie as the, quote, number one back, at some point in this season, you're going to get to a point where he's never played that deep into a year before. And then the playoffs are going to start. So I think it just makes sense to add more quality veteran players in their scenario, especially when it doesn't cost you anything. And even if it doesn't work out great, even if let's just say Bell has hit the wall a little earlier than some other running backs, oh well, what did it cost you?
Yeah, I mean, sure, they could reevaluate the situation because Damian Williams doesn't have a contract beyond 2020 after he opted out here. So they can look at that. Who do they want to bring back between those two? Who's going to be the better value for them going forward to help Edwards-Helaire here? So I think, it's a very low-risk, high-reward signing, and it's a win-win because Bell gets to go to a contender as well.
No doubt. All right, let's take a peek at a couple of the big games this week. Let's just start with that one since we're on the Chiefs. I know it's Monday and we're going to go out of chronological order, but who cares? We're already talking about the Chiefs. What do you make of that matchup in Buffalo? I mean, obviously, both teams are off to really good starts. Josh Allen is becoming one of the more exciting quarterbacks. He's entertaining as hell. I mean, you know, he may not be quite at the Mahomes level, but he's entertaining as hell. And more often than not, he's been putting his team in a place where they're winning games this year.
Yeah, for the Bills, they're going to have to try to figure out a way to run the ball better here because there's a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. They've actually gone away from his running as well, which was an added element that caught teams off guard. He definitely can get in the open field, get some chunks when he takes off and runs. So they're going to incorporate more of this because that's how you beat the Chiefs. You have to attack them. They're not very good against the run. They're asking you to run against them. And they're kind of built here with their defense to rush the passer with Chris Jones and Frank Clark and have some guys in the secondary built to make plays off that pressure. So they're soft in the middle. However, you can run against them in that sense. So you got to establish that a little bit, but then it's also maintaining that aggressiveness downfield. So they've got that working with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. So you can be in position to run the ball because the Chiefs are more dictating tempo and making some big plays than it's all over pretty much whoever you are chasing down a quarterback. So it'll be definitely interesting. The Bills are at home, so that should help a little bit in this game. But I'm looking at the Chiefs. I mean, the matchups here all around are pretty good. Tre'Davious White should return for the Bills. That helps a little bit. Yep. No Sammy Watkins probably for the Chiefs. So when you look at that, I think you'll see a lot of Mecole Hardman. You'll see a lot of Travis Kelce work in the middle of the field a little bit more in this game. So I do like the Chiefs to win this game, and mainly because I trust Mahomes. And definitely you think about the Titans game where Allen had those two turnovers. You're just always going to trust Mahomes versus Allen until we see something different here.
I know the Raiders got to them this week, which was a little surprising to me, the 40 points, because the Chiefs' defense had actually been decent the first four games. I mean, you know, they were really good against the Patriots in that game. But, of course, that was also no Cam Newton and using backup quarterbacks that I'm sure that the Patriots didn't want on the field. So maybe that's it. But I thought their defense had looked better this year up until this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Raiders' game plan, that's exactly how you have to take down the Chiefs. It's that balance of we're going to commit to the run, we're always going to go back to it at some point, but we're also going to hit those home run balls.
Yeah.
And Derek Carr, that's been a knock on him, but he got those big plays. They're kind of getting the Chiefs a dose of their own medicine with those bombs to Nelson Aguilar and Henry Ruggs III. So, yeah, that's what the Bills, so that's how I'm going to follow this blueprint. But but the baseline is you do have to run the ball well against them. You have to try to win the time of possession battle, but also finish drives with touchdowns and make those big plays when needed. So it's very tough. A lot of teams are not capable of doing that. They have to play offense basically at the same level as the Chiefs, so going back and forth here. And I hope for a mistake or two from Mahomes, which happened in that game as well. He was a little off, so there's a few breaks you need against them, and then you have to really take advantage of them and hit those mental lapses when the Chiefs have them.
You know, one of the other big games this weekend, and this may be my favorite game of the weekend, is the Browns and the Steelers, Vinny. I don't know that there's a team that has changed the vibe of what people are feeling more from week one until now entering week six than the Browns. Week one, they got smoked by the Ravens, just absolutely dominated, 38-6. Already had people in Cleveland completely upset, which is understandable. But since then, they've been rocking and rolling on the offensive side. They're, what are they got to be averaging 35, 38 points a game in the last four games. And I know it's not against the best competition, but do you believe in the Browns, and how do they stack up, in your opinion, this week against Pittsburgh?
Well, I definitely thought they had a playoff potential here and getting in as that last seed in the AFC, and they've lived up to it quite a bit. And part of it was just knowing that they were going to pivot to kind of hiding Baker Mayfield. I don't want to say that they're down on him totally, but they're realizing that they just can't have him drop back and throw a wild, even though they have the receivers here. They need to have it within the flow of the offense, play action. He didn't even use that much play action last year, which is ridiculous. But when you have a strong running game here, even without Nick Chubb, you got Kareem Hunt to keep your backfield going here, and your offensive line is built to run the ball and play off that, and use Odell Beckham Jr. as that occasional deep threat, and it spread the ball around in the middle of the field to Jarvis Landry and Austin Hooper. So this is the kind of offense they should have been running. They were running a very high-risk, low-reward offense. Now it's the opposite of that, where they're really having motion and getting guys all over the field and having blocking first and runs to set up the pass and all that. So I like the way they're going. I still have some concerns about their pass defense. Mm-hmm. I still have concerns as how consistently can Baker Mayfield win games where he's asked to throw 40 or 50 times. And those are going to be the issues here for the Browns. But given where they were last year and the mess they had, I mean, this is a big improvement. At least they're somewhat put together offensively, where they seem to be just throwing darts last year.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh, you know, again, similar to Cleveland, the schedule's not been all that rough. I mean, nobody they've played is off to a good start, but they've looked good doing it. I mean, they're not allowing any points. Roethlisberger is nearly 70% on his completions. They're running the ball well, 4.5 yards per carry as a team. I'm not sure that 4-0 is the kind of team we're talking about, but they certainly look like they're back to being good now that they've got Big Ben back.
Yeah, the defense is a very strong baseline for the Steelers. I, in fact, think the Steelers' defense has kind of been disappointing in some ways. They've given up a lot of big plays, more than I thought, and especially when they have good pressure guys there, T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree, and ways to get after the quarterback. They're the best pressuring team in the NFL. They're pretty solid against the run as well, but they've had those lapses. We've seen it. Big play problems have occurred for the Steelers, and there's some fundamental issues where they gamble and lose on some of these big plays defensively. And the other concern I would have is, you look at Ben Roethlisberger, he's been very good, but they're not having that downfield element all that much. They're kind of spreading around, using motion, quickness, yeah. Using different guys after the catch to make plays. But are they going to get the vertical passing game at some point? And I said, you kind of need to have that element. The Bills have it. The Raiders showed it against the Chiefs. You kind of need that if you're going to dethrone Kansas City at some point. And that's my biggest concern with the Steelers. And I really, at this point, the Ravens, because they've had some games where they get the deep ball going, but it's been a struggle also for Lamar Jackson to push the ball downfield to other guys as well. So that opens the opportunity here for the Browns if they can get Baker Mayfield to be a little bit better at throwing the ball downfield.
Good point. All right, a couple quick things left. And Vinny Iyer from the Sporting News, kind enough to talk some football with us here on a Friday night. Vinny, I'm not buying the Bears. I mean, they're 4-1. I know they've got some defensive playmakers. I know that the defensive numbers look good, but I also look up. And the other than the game against the Bucs, which to me was a surprise, I was shocked that they beat the Bucs last weekend. You know, they played four teams that are out of the gate slow. They lost one of those games against the Colts. They're in Carolina, so I'm not sure that the run comes to an end this weekend because I'm not sure what I think about Carolina yet. Should I be buying more into the Bears, or am I on the right track?
Well, I think the Bears have a good baseline with what they're trying to do. I mean, they're not very good against the run, but a very good pass defense team, which you don't have very many in the NFL right now. And they've got to be thrilled the way Kyle Fuller is playing, also the rookie Jalen Johnson on the other side. Khalil Mack, pretty deep pass rush here. So, yeah, they are grinding. This is like old-school Chicago Bears football. But playing some defense. David Montgomery's looked a lot better. He's bulked up, running the ball behind a beefed-up offensive line as well. So they should have some success. And as long as they can run the ball in some of these games, they're going to have a chance to win. I think they got a few breaks against the Bucs with all those penalties from Tampa. Mm-hmm. Carolina, I think the key is going to be, can they blitz and get after Teddy Bridgewater and disrupt some things there? David Montgomery should have an opportunity to have a big game also against this Panthers run defense. So the Bears are going to grind a little bit more. That's what they realized. They said, who's going to kind of support us and make a few big plays when needed in the passing game? With this type of football, it wasn't Mitchell Trubisky. It was more Nick Foles, where he's going to grind out, be tough. I don't think he gets enough credit for being a tough quarterback there, where he doesn't mind this type of ugly football. As long as he makes a few plays, or Al Robinson or Jimmy Graham helps him make a play downfield, then he's going to be good to go here. So it's not pretty for the Bears, but, I mean, the record is going to rack up another win here. And we know there's that extra playoff team in the NFC.
Yep.
And, it's not going to come out of the East. It may not come out of the North here. So I really think this is a golden opportunity for the Bears, as the Vikings may be the team that they've displaced to get in the playoffs.
All right, last one, and we'll just, you know, the Bucs are involved in this one too, but Packers and the Bucs, interesting to me. Like Tampa's coming into the year was, you know, for all the Brady reasons, a very interesting team coming in, and they've kind of had an uneven start, and you know they didn't really get things going against the Bears last week, but that just may be the Bears' pass defense, as you mentioned, being really good. What do you make of the Bucs in this matchup, and obviously Green Bay off to a great start?
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one as well. I mean, this is definitely going to be high scoring, and the Bucs have everyone back now. I mean, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, you have Scotty Miller's healthier, you have Justin Watson, the fourth receiver, is pretty good as well. Except for O.J. Howard, everyone's out there for the Bucs this week. So this is finally the full-strength Tom Brady offense at work here. I think they would have worked on things after that Bears game. And they can run the ball. We know that. Ronald Jones has looked pretty good. If you look at the Bucs, if you start looking around, you say, okay, they can run the ball. They've got some passing game weapons. They can stop the run. They're still very good at doing that. They've got some pass rushers out there, Shaquille Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, and a young secondary. You start to wonder what's really the weakness of the Bucs. So this is a team that can really put it all together, where you see some fundamental defensive weaknesses with the Seahawks and Packers and these other teams. But I think Bucs have the most untapped potential of anyone in the NFC right now, standing at 3-2. So this is a big statement game. If they can have a good defensive day, at least contain Aaron Jones, put Aaron Rodgers in some pressure situations, they have a shot here in this game, definitely at home. And I actually like them to come through here. And Green Bay, again, has coverage issues. They have one very good corner, Jair Alexander. But yeah, now Chris Godwin coming back, I think, is a game changer, because he's an elite number one, co-number one here with Mike Evans. And pick your poison, you're going to get burned by one of these guys. And Tom Brady's smart enough to know that.
Vinny, thanks for coming on and helping us break down some Week 6 stuff, man. Stay healthy, enjoy the games, and hopefully we'll talk some football again soon, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good one, Kevin.
You got it. Vinny Iyer, The Sporting News, and you'll find Vinny on Twitter, by the way. Just add his name, Vinny, the normal spelling. It's with an I-E, not a Y, and his last name, I-Y-E-R. Always good time talking football, Vin. All right, coming up next, I have identified one potential trade target for the Cardinals. This doesn't mean that the Cardinals will have interest in him. It doesn't mean that the other team will have interest in trading this player. It's not a prediction. It's not a demand. It's just a thought. It's early in the offseason. We're just throwing some things out there and seeing if anything makes sense when we say it out loud. We'll get to that next up. Kevin Wheeler with you here on Sports Open Line on KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
All right, so continuing to have a little fun, we are starting the off-season conversation in baseball right away because, well, it is our off-season here in St. Louis. You've still got playoff baseball happening, but really only another, what, after this weekend, we're only looking at another, what, 8-9 days after that. So we're almost done with this. We are into the postseason. And by the way, boo, Houston's winning. Boo. They're up 5-1 in the bottom of the sixth inning. The Rays do have a couple of runners on base, though, with one out. So fingers crossed, a little rally maybe, get back into this game. Anyway, that's where it stands now. So as I go through the offseason, I mean, part of what I'm going to do is keep looking at the Cardinals roster. And like today, some of the players that should bounce back. You know, we can talk a bit about prospects that might come out of nowhere at some point. But also, I've also hit on some free agents at multiple levels, right? The top end free agents, the next level down, maybe some of the more bargain guys that would be more kind of platoon split type guys. And you know, again, we'll continue to look at that too. But as mentioned a number of times, they're going to have to be exploring the trade market too. You know, that's something that they've had some more success with compared to free agency. It's also an interesting trade market because you might find teams, and this is kind of what I looked for when I'm looking for trade candidates. I'm looking for teams that need pitching. That's going to be a match for the Cardinals, right? If you need pitching, the Cardinals have it. You know, that's like kind of top of the list, right? How do you match up with the team? They also have, Cardinals do, some position players that are young and inexpensive, or you know, if not super young, you know, youngish and inexpensive, that could also be included as part of a package if the other team wants to get some position player depth in the deal as well. You look for teams that might want to save some cash and or create playing time for a top prospect. And, you know, again, that's kind of, you know, where I started this is, will this team potentially be motivated to move a player? Maybe not this particular player, but will they potentially be motivated to move a player? Will they, you know, look to maybe move a little money if that's part of the fact, if that's a factor for them? And, you know, do you match up with them? And one of the teams I found that could be a matchup is the Minnesota Twins. Number one, they're going to need pitching. You know, they have two starting pitchers this year, Rich Hill and Jake Odorizzi, that are free agents at the end of the year. You know, to my knowledge, not a lot of top pitching prospects are coming along in their system that are ready to come in. They'll still have Jose Berríos. They'll still have Kenta Maeda. They'll still have Michael Pineda. They'll still have three starting pitchers, but they could use some pitching depth. They've also got, I believe, two guys that are going to be unrestricted free agents in their bullpen, and possibly a third that they could move on from. They have an option on Sergio Romo for next year if they chose not to pick that up. They could also use some bullpen help, too, with some of the veterans that they have hitting free agency in this offseason. So they're a team that's a potential match. They may be a team that's looking to save some money in one spot because they also have a top prospect for this spot, so that they could reallocate that money to some of the places that they would like to, like maybe in re-signing Nelson Cruz as an example. So the guy that I picked out is Eddie Rosario, their left fielder from the last few years. So Rosario made $7.75 million this past season. That was before it was prorated. He's arbitration eligible one last time. He's 28 years old, so next year will be his age 29 season. And here are Rosario's home run totals over the last three full seasons, 27, 24, and 32. Plus, he had 13 home runs this year, which would have easily led the Cardinals. And, you know, 13 home runs in a third of a season, don't have to be a rocket surgeon to realize that that's like 30-plus home runs and stuff, right? He's a guy that over the last 4 years, slugging percentage has gone 507, 479, 500, 476. So he's bringing some slug. The one thing that Rosario doesn't bring is patience. He doesn't draw walks. So you're looking at a player that over the last 4 years has been about 10, 12% above league average as a hitter. He's going to be 25 to 30 home runs. He's a decent enough left fielder where you're not going to be worried about your defense. He's fine defensively. You know, he may not be a stud out there, but he's fine compared to what you're getting. He's a, you know, over the last 3 years, over the last four seasons, an 813 OPS, 14% above league average, left-handed bat, which I think would be helpful. So if you're looking at the total picture here, you'd be trading for a player that only has 1 year left under team control, but maybe that's not a terrible thing. You know, if you look at the 2022 Cardinals, you're going to have a lot of money to play with. And if this player, if in this case Eddie Rosario, if he's going to end up leaving too, that's fine. You're acquiring him before his last year. You could always offer him the tender offer if he plays well enough. You know, you'll have potentially Matt Carpenter's contract coming off after next year. You'll have Dexter Fowler's contract coming off after next year. You've got a cheap bat coming at some point in Nolan Gorman, right? He'll be here in the next 2 years. So you're going to have a lot more free space. Now, keep in mind, some of that may go to Jack Flaherty. You know, there may be other guys that are going to be getting raises. But the point is, after this coming year, there's going to be a lot more flexibility so that even if you lost this player that you traded for, you're going to have a lot of money to maneuver around. Now, I mentioned, you know, the Twins as a match in part because they've already got Byron Buxton in center field and they have team control over him for two more years after this year. So they've got him for 21 and 22 under control. They've got Max Kepler signed through 2023 with a team option for 2024. So two of their outfield spots are locked up, locked down, good to go. They also have one of the best prospects in baseball in Alex Kirilloff. And Kirilloff is 22. He made his major league debut in these playoffs. They're clearly very high on him. He's the number 27 prospect in baseball, and he's a corner outfielder. So there may be a willingness on their part to move the player when they have a young guy that they could slide in there if it's going to free up some money for them. Because, you know, if you look at Rosario, I mentioned he made $7.75 million this past season. He's got another year of arbitration. He's probably going to make $12 to $15 million in 2021. But again, if you're acquiring him, it's just a one-year commitment, and you'd still have that ability to maybe negotiate a deal beyond that or whatever. Is this perfect? No. It's just one idea because there's at least potentially a fit where they're going to need some pitching with several pitchers hitting free agency, a couple of starters and two or three relievers. Nelson Cruz is a free agent. You know, they may want to spend some more money to keep him around and then plug Kirilloff in left field. So I get what I'm saying here is, you know, they're a team that kind of matches up with you, some flexibility, and this is a player that would make your lineup better. Is he an amazing, like, automatic, dominant four-hole hitter? No. But he brings something that the Cardinals have had a hard time getting here in the last few years, and that's some power. And, you know, he's done it pretty consistently now for four straight full seasons. Because the power that he showed this past season, 13 home runs in a third of a season, is pretty stinking good. So there's one name. And I'm searching for others. I'm going to tell you guys, it's not easy to find really good trade partners, teams that match up with you, teams that might be motivated to move a player that could really help you. It's not easy. I spent a lot of time doing this in my spare time to make sure that I have a full grasp of what we're talking about. And there are more, and this is just the first one. I'm sure I'll have more of these ideas and more of these type segments moving forward. But I don't like to just throw random names out there, and I don't like to throw stuff out there that is unlikely. And I'm sure I'm going to get messages like, trade for Lindor. All right. I mean, yes, that would be amazing. And I'll move players all around the field if I have to get a player like that. But realistically speaking, the asking price is going to be crazy. He's going to be more expensive. It's only 1 year. Do you want to pay the price for that 1 year? I'm like, I don't mind people shooting high, but what I'm trying to find are the ones that are the most rational fits. Plus, you know, a lot of teams are going to be in on Lindor. It's going to be harder to pry him away and be the winning, have the highest bid, I guess you could say. All right, we'll wrap things up by checking in on what's happening in Major League Baseball. We'll give you an update on the Astros and the Rays, take a look at the Dodgers and the Braves for tonight, and then we'll get you ready for the weekend. Coming up next, Kevin Wheeler with you here on Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, final few minutes of Sports Open Line. This Astros-Rays thing is just not going to go well. They're going to do it, aren't they? The stupid Astros are going to come back and win this series. They're up 7-1 now in the top of the seventh inning. God, I don't even like saying it. I'm trying to ignore this. Now, their young pitcher, Framber Valdez, has been awesome. He's pitched 6 innings with 9 strikeouts, just 1 earned run allowed. He's been amazing. The Rays pitching in this game has just not been good. You know, they brought in Diego Castillo to try to put out a fire after Blake Snell struggled a bit. And he got knocked around a little. Now the rookie McClanahan's getting knocked around. There's going to be a Game 7 in the American League Championship Series at this point, and that sucks. I hate that so much. I do not want the Astros to be the team that erases the 3-0 deficit. Oh, please don't. Don't let it be. And if they are, like, okay, fine, but they got to lose in the World Series. They just have to. There's no. I can't. I mean, I'll survive. It's not like I'm going to die if the jerky Astros get to thump their chests and act like they never cheated, even though they did. Why are you mad at us? Because you were cheating. That's why. Not going the right way. You've got Game 5 now with the Braves and the Dodgers coming up in a few minutes. The Dodgers just don't look right. I mean, you know, obviously they've got Dustin May. So they have the better of the pitching matchup tonight. I mean, Dustin May starting. The Braves are going to go with a bullpen game. They're starting with reliever A.J. Minter. You know, this is season on the line for the Dodgers. And really, at this point in the Dodgers' history, anything that isn't a World Series win is going to be viewed as a disappointment. And I mean, not only am I rooting for the Braves tonight, I'd like to see that. Tired of the Dodgers. I'd love to see the Braves win the World Series. Braves and Rays World Series would be the most fun to me. May not be the sexiest for television, but I don't care about that. I'm just in it for the entertainment value, and I think that the Rays and the Braves would be an entertaining, fun World Series. We'll see. The Braves could advance with a win tonight, but God, the Astros are back in it. That stinks. Moving ahead real quickly, we got kind of an interesting college football weekend. Looks like Alabama and Georgia are going to be able to play after all, so you got number 2 and number 3 against each other tomorrow night. That's really the only quote-unquote big game in college football this weekend. Some other teams are playing, some high-ranked teams are playing, but that's the only, like, good-on-good, ranked-on-ranked. So I'll be kind of holding off and watching that coming up tomorrow night. You guys have a great weekend. If you're going to watch football Saturday and Sunday, enjoy it. Playoff baseball, enjoy it. I'll have a chance to come back, and we will not talk Monday because of the Monday night football game with the Chiefs. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Have a great night.